This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
College holds a mythic place in American culture. On the new Campus Files podcast, we uncover the scandals you won't hear on the campus tours. Find Campus Files on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to Jeffrey Wright and Company. My name is Jeffrey Wright. You can follow me on Twitter, on X, at jwright929ESPN. As always, you can listen on the radio dial, 92.9 FM or 680 AM. But if you're away from the radio, you want to keep up to date with everything happening here at the station, download the Odyssey app. Free to download, free to listen, stream anytime, anywhere. You can even listen on demand. George Ruggiero is the producer of the program. You can follow him on Twitter, on X, at KingGeorge94. George, good day, sir.
It is Yuki Kawamura's world, and we're all just living in it.
Big day for Yuki yesterday. Happy for, it seemed like there was a pretty good contingency of Japanese fans, so that seemed to be the big headline from yesterday's game, which was, let's be real, a G League game. That's pretty much what we saw. So we'll get into that. Let's welcome my co-host, as he is each and every Monday on the program, head coach, team director of Team Thad of the Nike EYBL circuit. Follow him on all socials at Dream Big Herd. Coach Herd, good day, sir.
Great day. Great sports weekend. Great day.
It was a loaded sports weekend. And obviously, being a big Rory McIlroy fan, yesterday was quite the roller coaster. Big happy day, but we will, of course, start with the Grizzlies. Coach has got a good point about roster construction in the next couple of years, really over the next 12 months, that I want to talk through with him. Also, you're going to have to talk me off the edge. I'm a little worried about the Tigers' NIL war chest. I particularly in basketball. And I'm not honestly pointing fingers, but I'm worried. And so I want to discuss that with you. Also, we got to talk about the Nico thing. Mm-hmm. It does appear, George, have you seen the rumored landing spot?
Where's that?
How do we feel about this? North Carolina with Bill Belichick.
Wow.
Yeah, that's something to think about right there.
We got to talk through that whole situation. Munz is going to join us like he does each and every Monday. We'll ask him about the Tigers, the NIL front, recruiting, how it's going. We got the NBA playoffs set. Do we do Black Monday in the NBA? Do we call it Black Monday?
I don't think they call it that because it's like, with the NFL, you know, it's one game a week.
Well, it's like, and also with the NFL, it's like seven guys get fired. Like in the NBA, a lot of times, like, was anyone truly surprised Mike Budenholzer got fired? Like, you could watch the Suns. You're like, something's going to happen.
He underachieved, but I think it's been a black last 2-3 weeks because it's been some crazy.
There's also the reality. Did the Grizzlies change the game?
Yeah. some crazy firings with playoff teams.
Correct.
This was the first true firing.
Correct. This was the one that's like, all right, that makes sense. They missed the playoffs, whatnot. But we had NBA firings moving on. Also, a little bit more from the world of NBA. The playoffs are set. Then maybe we'll talk a little Masters in there as well. We'll tell your story, and then we'll get out of here. But a couple of things, Herd, because I want to get to the topic that you brought up right before we hit the airways. I just want to say this for the record. I was 36 years old on last Friday night when I learned an NBA team could go 7 minutes without scoring a basket. No joke, y'all. I looked up 6:58 on the game clock. Ja hits an 8-foot floater. The Grizzlies did not make a shot the rest of the game. They hit a few free throws here and there, but it was everyone kept pointing to a 14-1 run, and I'm pulling my hair out. That was not a run. That was just the Nuggets kept scoring at a normal rate, and the Grizzlies did not. That was a 14-1 crawl, or maybe just like waddle. But it was not. It wasn't like when you see a 14-1 run in the NBA. Oftentimes, it's like team hits three threes, couple of big dunks, steals. But it's like it happens like that. This was just the Nuggets just kept playing at their and scoring at their same rate. It's just the Grizzlies did not score, and that was something.
No, Jeff, that is you brought that to my attention. Like I knew about the run, but I didn't realize. I think unless you look it up like you did or paid attention, a lot of us wouldn't have realized because it's at any level, middle school, high school, college, NBA, that's pretty hard to do to go seven. I mean, even when we played, Jeff, do you remember the time when you played in community centers, right?
Oh, yeah.
So it would be.
Shout out Marion Hale.
Yeah, okay, yeah, I'm Mitchell Community Center, Gas Nod, all everything in the South. So it would be you had to either score 8 points by ones and twos or it was 8 minutes on the clock, whichever one go by first.
Yep.
According to what you're saying, if both teams played like that, the score would have either been 0-0 to a tie after 8 minutes or 1-0. Yep. Like, so I'm saying if that.
It would have been like 3-0.
Yeah.
Seriously, it would have been like 3-0. Because like, it wasn't like, oh, Jokic just went insane. Like, Jokic was great. He's a great player. And Murray hit a couple of tough shots. But it wasn't like, oh, my God, the Nuggets just turned it on. It was, oh, my God, the Grizzlies turned it off.
And probably going into, and this is where people say numbers don't lie, but this is where they can kind of get, you can switch them up.
Numbers don't lie, people do, with numbers.
Yeah, but this is where numbers can get a little tricky. I bet you Denver, going into the playoff, defensive stats have increased by that. Not saying their defense is any more better, but because they just held a team to under the rate for 7 minutes, that has increased statistically there. And I don't think they that much of a defensive team before they were that 7 minutes. What do you think?
So I'm with you on that because this is a big point that I felt like I was making early in the year when the Grizzlies had the great record. But I kept thinking, man, the schedules really worked out in their favor, and I thought their defensive numbers were lying. They were playing a lot of really bad teams, and their offense was so good. They were just getting these massive leads, and everyone felt like they were playing from behind, so they just started jacking up a bunch of threes. And so it wasn't like their defense. I don't think their defense of talent, like the defense of talent, lined up with their metrics. Now, I think two things are also true. Number one, the effort. It really does seem to me, Taylor Jenkins at the end, the message was being lost. Like, it's always tough to definitively say they quit on a coach, but the effort was definitely not there. And so with Denver, we had Mike Sanford on, who does Denver radio. He was on Friday, and he was a big believer of, he was not an anti-Malone guy, but he's like, listen, it's just bad. And maybe by giving it to Adelman, the effort will pick up and they'll be a little bit better. So I think there was a little interim coach bump, but not to the level of holding the Grizzlies scoreless. Now, I also want to be fair to the Grizzlies. That's about as bad of a situation to go play a game as you possibly could have. They had the intense Thursday night game late against the T-Wolves. Remember, I was up and down.
Oh, yeah.
Ton of possessions, high energy. And then they get in at 4 a.m. and they got to go play that next night. So it's possible they just run out of gas. Like that's a reasonable thing. And the Grizzlies now, I give to almost all the credit in the world, they're cutting down the rotations. And so it's not that many guys playing. And so it's, you can say they did run out of gas. That's fine, but it's still 7 minutes without a basket. And this is kind of the bigger point is that that game was kind of the season in a nutshell in that the Grizzlies they led for 40 minutes and like 30 seconds. Mm-hmm. It was tied for about 3 minutes. And then the Nuggets led for, I think, 4.5 total minutes and like 2.5 were in the early stages, the first minutes of the game. But you see the issue that they have late game, which is the floor condenses. Everybody defensively, everyone's kind of playing them the same way. They're running like that 3-2 shell where they're basically daring the Grizzlies to shoot with the exception of Bane. Everyone tries to guard Bane. But other than that, it's like, let them shoot threes and don't let Ja get going downhill. And so then what happens is the Grizzlies are kind of like playing the clock a little bit. And so you wind up with eventually Ja gets the ball back with like 7 seconds left and he has to go to the hole and either has to make a ridiculous finish or, you know, he's hoping somebody comes off their man. He's going to make a quick pass. But they had turnovers late in those situations. They did not get clean looks. And offense is just really difficult when the game starts to tighten up because they don't have enough guys to spread you out. And so, like, in a way, it was kind of understandable. It was still jarring to watch. Like, it's one of those things where it's like, all right, if I say they only make 2 shots down the stretch, you're like, all right, whatever. But basically, for over half of the quarter, they did not make a shot.
Yeah, I guess that's the part, Jeff, that I can't wrap around my mind. Because you are giving some good points, and you're giving some valid points. But for me, we're still talking about NBA players.
Yes, at an guys NBA, get paid.
At an NBA game. I haven't even got to the pay yet. In an NBA game, I do expect them to make a few shots. I know you go through slumps, 2, 3, 4 shots. But if you're saying, and you know these numbers better than me, how often does that happen? Because I can't remember, but I know you might have more stats in front of you. Is that something that happened?
Their offense in the last 5 minutes has to be bottom five in the league.
Well, I'm saying just period average in the lead. What is the average drought a person go without scoring in a quarter or in the fourth quarter? Is that average or that's way beyond average?
Oh, it's not unheard of to see like a 3-minute stretch.
Yeah.
But 7, I would imagine. I would imagine that was close to one of the league. Like, that would be the largest scoring drought in the league in the fourth quarter.
This year or this decade?
This year. I would think that would be close.
For what it's worth, and I was curious because I remember it because I listened. Yeah. I ended up listening to that game, and Eric mentioned it more than once how long they had gone without making a basket. Obviously, not free throws and taking fouls, things like that. In that span, they were 0-9
yeah.
from the field. 0-9 from the field.
It's
end of different kinds. Open threes, missed layups, missed dunks, missed second chance opportunities, off rebounds. It was any kind of which way they were trying to score, it just wasn't going.
Mm. Yeah, that's interesting. Hopefully that doesn't happen. What's tonight or tomorrow night or whatever.
So that's the thing. It's like, as much as this last 2 months has sucked, and I think we can all be pretty transparent, like, vibes have sucked. They do have one game to kind of erase it all. Because if you go to Golden State and you beat the Warriors and then you wind up having a relatively competitive series against the Rockets, even if you get beat, it feels like just going and winning tomorrow night could salvage most of this turd sandwich.
No, that's true. Especially at this point, I know it sounds crazy. At one point, we was like, oh, yucky, 7 seed, get away from me.
Yeah.
But after these last 3, 7 seed is kind of like something to pump your chest out of it right now, the way things are going. But one more thing about that run, Jeffrey, or that lack of not run that they made or whatever.
They
did. You're right. Like, and Jeffrey, I give you credit for, because a lot of times you keep it real, like most guys on 92.9, and, you know, that we don't agree with just the mess here, and we're not going to call the, you know, athletes. But you actually made a lot of good points, because the Minnesota game was tough and this, and that. But Jeffrey, you're going to get me in trouble because I'm cool with a lot of these people and I'm out there. But it's like, Jeffrey, I think I heard you this morning on one of these shows, maybe 9 o'clock with Kyle, because you did some more stuff too. That don't mean you can't bring your AK to this and have a drought, right? I mean.
No.
And you.
When you're on the floor, you got to make plays.
You make a lot less than they do. I'm just saying, like, they are human beings. Let me say that. And I am a players guy, and I actually know a lot of players or people around the Grizzlies personally, so NBA players, period. But 90% or 80% or 70% of NBA players do, and I'm not making it about money, make enough to have their bodies and, I mean, you know, they get massages on planes. I mean, they have high – it ain't like when I was at Mitchell and I played in the JV game at 4:30 and had to go play in the varsity game at 7, twist my ankle, and it wasn't no ice, but the ice I'm wrapping up, and we didn't know what icy hot was, and nobody stretched me or nothing. You know, it's like
– I got some tape for you.
Yeah, like they are getting the top of the line. What the NBA and all pro teams do – with the guys taking care of their body. I think they have invested in taking care of the guy's body better than ever before.
Oh, I mean, I would imagine this is true. I bet LeBron spends more money taking care of his body in a year than I'll ever see in my lifetime.
That's true. He said it. LeBron, because
he has the chef. He has the chef. I mean, I'm sure he's doing every, you know, sleep treatment. Like, I'm sure he's doing it all.
No, he said it, and Jaylen Brown came back last week. I don't know if y'all seen it. Said he do like 500,000 or 600,000 because he do that underwater training in the summer. He does so, and we're not saying it's to pick on them guys to talk about their money. We're just saying that, especially the stars, I think they should be prepared. Like, think about it, the NBA went down on back to back nights more than ever before. They actually did some AAU stuff. When they go to Miami or Orlando or certain cities, they let the guys play two games there now back-to-back and stay in those cities 2 to 4 days. And trust me, the players like when they go to Miami and certain places, they get to
Really?
Yeah, 4 straight
days. Miami better than the Memphis trip? They like the Miami trip a little better?
So I don't know what more the NBA could do, Jeff, because to me, you're playing back-to-back. That's like some high school. That is like taking more wear and tear.
Sure.
So I think they're doing a good job at that. So, you know, not to not have any sympathy for those guys, but I just still think that they cannot, you know, let 7 minutes go by or be that out of it or that tired or, you know, if they're off, they're off. But I don't think it should be a body reason or a gas reason or anything like that, in my opinion.
Yeah, so I looked it up. In the last 15 games, the Grizzlies are 27th in the league in fourth quarter scoring.
Oh,
so they are the only teams that are worse are the Wizards and then the Magic.
I was going to say probably not playoff team, but the Magic is a playoff team, right? They're
yes.
Like top five or six.
They're in the East. That helps.
Yeah.
They're a playing team, right? I think they're playing the.
At first, they were hot.
They're playing the Hawks, I believe, right?
Yes.
I think they're in the 7-8 game.
Yeah. So they like
tomorrow,
nine.
They were the. Is that. Are they the seven?
I want to say they're the seven and the Hawks are the. No. Yep. So they're hosting Atlanta tomorrow night. They're the early game.
They're the seven. Okay.
They'll be hosting the Hawks, and then the Grizzlies will play at Golden State after.
That should actually be kind of a fun game.
Yeah, they're actually two good games, though.
Both of them.
This is the thing, though, about the play-in. I do think overall the games have been competitive and good to watch. I'm still not sure this thing's necessary.
Mm.
Like, I get what the premise was. The premise was we want more teams to try and stay competitive throughout the rest of the year rather than the teams that look up, see that they're out of the standings, and they're just going to mail in the season. And so you have that affecting the competitive enterprise. But, like, the Grizzlies are sitting here at 48-34, and they're the 8th seed. The Kings are the 9, and they're 40-32. That's an 8-game difference. Like, I'm just not convinced this thing's necessary. Like, but it's the situation. Now, the spin zone would be, I would rather the Grizzlies have this scenario where you got one game, and yes, you haven't won in California. Yes, you're going to be a significant underdog tomorrow night. But at least if you know it's a one-game series, and you go and you pop the Warriors, you get to be in the 7-game. Rather than we would know the Grizzlies would just be waiting on the Thunder for a 4 or 5-game series, which is what it would be set up for.
Exactly. No, I'm with you on it. I think where a spin to it, though, is, Jeff, like at the 8th seed, they still have the opportunity if the Warriors
sure.
was eight games in front of them. And then, two, I think the look fairness that you can make out of it, it ain't like it's the NCAA where, like, where the 7-8 seed is like, the Kings only got to beat them once.
Right.
If you let them beat you twice at that point, that's I know it's an 8-game difference. That's kind of on you a little bit, especially if they beat you like 2-0.
So the problem though with this setup is, okay, the most likely outcome is the Grizzlies are going to go to Golden State and lose tomorrow night. It's the most likely outcome. Doesn't mean that's what's going to happen. That's why we watch sports. Grizzlies can easily.
That's what the bet's saying. I know you were betting.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think they're favored by like 7. So it's not like. I'm pretty sure when they went in 22 and beat the Warriors in the play-in, it was the second play-in game. I want to say they were like 9-point dogs, 10-point dogs. So it's like, it's not even as big as that difference. Mm-hmm. But the most likely scenario is they're going to come back and then they host the winner of the Kings and the Mavericks. But then if you get into that game, it's just like the ultimate, what are we rooting for? Because the other complication is the only way the Grizzlies can keep their draft pick is to lose. The draft pick that they sent with Marcus Smart to Washington is lottery protected. So if they make the lottery, they get to keep the pick. If they win the game, congratulations, you go play OKC and no pick. And so that's when this is where I want to discuss what we were talking about off the air, which is this is a weird year in the sense that I think if I would have just said the Grizzlies are going to be 48-34, but I wouldn't have told you where they're going to finish in the standings, I think most people would have said, all right, that's probably a little on the low side, but I'll take it. You would have probably thought that would have been good enough to get you probably top 6. And, like, yeah, that's not a championship team, but, like, that would have at least made you feel, all right, they're back on it. But the problem is, it's 48-34. You fired your coach with 9 games remaining. You have been a below 500 basketball team since the All-Star break. It does feel like every time you play a good team, you're getting beat. I think it's the stats now 6-19 against teams ahead of them in the standings. And there's this weird reality of, okay, what's their path to getting better next year? Because if you really think about it, I think they could have a mid-level exception. Now, I think the Grizzlies have had mid-level exceptions the last 2 years, and I believe they've not used them yet. Now, doesn't mean that means that they won't use it this time, but they're not going to have a ton of cap space. Like, the mechanisms for getting better are just hoping that your players are better next year. Like, to me, it's, all right, I'm not saying Ja's going to play 82 games, but, like, maybe you get 65 games of Ja. That right there would help. Like, period. Like, that would help a great deal. But then you're banking on Vince will be healthier. Like, Vince still really isn't healthy, but he looks a little better than he has for much of the year. But you could have a healthy Vince. You would have Jalen Wells back, and he's better in year 2. ED be better in year 2. And basically you're just hoping for better health from your team. I think the real question, though, is, like, how good is that team? Because as bad as it's felt, I actually think the more aggravating part is I feel like of the last 2.5 weeks, Ja, Jaren, and Dez collectively have been pretty good. I'm not saying they're playing their best basketball, but I don't sit back after they lose and go, they got to be better. Like, they played pretty well. And it still hasn't been enough. I guess also you could throw in Brandon Clark avoids surgery. But I don't know. You tell me if I'm wrong about this. I get a little uneasy when you read the health solution was the old injection. Like, I don't know. I feel like Kobe popularized this. Like, it's the, well, he avoided surgery. Now they can do the injection thing. That always just says to me, it's like, they don't want to do the surgery, but, like, I always said I viewed it like my brother was a pitcher, and he's playing summer baseball after his sophomore year. It's after his freshman year, or redshirt freshman year, and he's playing in North Carolina, and he throws a slider, and he immediately goes to the elbow. Well, my dad goes over to North Carolina to meet him. They go and they see like a local orthopedic, and he's like, it's torn, it needs surgery. Obviously, that's like the last thing you want to hear as a pitcher, because like that is a year long, like you're done, you're shut it down, you're missing next year, everything. So if you can avoid it, you want to avoid it. Well, you start doing the move where you go and you find a doctor who's like, we can rehab it. We'll shut it down for a few months, rehab it. Guess what? It needed surgery. I wonder about this, but it's at the same time, it's like, I don't know. Is this something that's that popularized now?
That you can be holding off the inevitable is still going to happen. Yeah, I actually think one name you didn't say, I think, and you know I'm a fan of his, I know he got to work on his defense. I think next year, Gigi should be then came into himself, like coming to the season, which you said a lot about health, fully healthy.
I think the attitude around Gigi is that Gigi needs an attitude adjustment. That is the common thread I keep hearing.
He's been causing problems a little bit. I mean, I've seen him.
It's not even necessarily like locker room problem or whatever you think about it. It's more of
fully yourself,
not bought in, and not embracing the role that they envision for him. It's like basically, it's like him thinking he's ahead of where he is.
Yeah. Fully, in so many words, fuller himself.
Yeah.
How many, you were saying health too, how many games did y'all play this year?
44, I think.
Okay, so it was still, it was only half the games, pretty much.
So I want to say, I think it's about 45.
Okay, and we need the, and like you said, we said this right before the year, nobody expects him to do 82. The guy jumped
50 on the nose this year.
50 on the nose, okay.
50, so we're just, everybody kind of have said who you talk to, 65 would be a great number.
Oh, yeah. I mean, look, I'm now at the point where if you offer me 65 at the beginning of the year, I take it.
Yeah. And so we got to go up. We got two more, 15.
I think if Ja plays 65 games, they're not in the play-in. I feel confident in that.
No, for sure.
Ja would have at least flipped at the minimum two games, and they would be out of the play-in.
But see, that's why also, and I know we circle back to things, and if you listen clear, when I'm hearing 44 games, that also make me say then what happened last year to the team is like, I'm not trying to switch because I know you be like, this. How's the coach fired then? Because, I mean, and now with a 65 job and we're in a play-in, a coach should get fired. You know, and this is where I feel like, and I'm not coming from a coach perspective, like even we just talked about Suns coach got fired. Well, that guy has won a championship and most of the Suns players haven't. And those that have that many superstars unmotivated, I don't know if that's just a coaching issue. Now, some of this stuff be these stars got to be a little, held accountable. You know, the Suns was, doing this last year, the year before. They kind of been doing this to have that much talent. That's ridiculous for them not to be in a play-in game. So I get it to fire the coach, but to have a Kevin Durant, Devin Booker, and Bradley Beal on the team, anyone us in 92.9 should at least got them to a play-in game. So I think we'd even out a coach.
No, I mean, I think in the end, like, that's kind of why, in the end, you can fire Budenholzer.
As a scapegoat.
Yeah, but, like, the reality is like, they're going to have to do something about the roster. And this is kind of what you and I were talking with earlier, which is,
what can they do, really?
Yeah. Because there's now this weird thing in the NBA. I don't know if it's weird. It's the way the CBA is structured. Because the Grizzlies are kind of in a similar spot to where the Nuggets were, with the exception of they don't have the best player in the world or one of, you take your pick. I think Jokic is the best player, second best player, however you want to define it. But a proven NBA MVP with a title. But everyone's kind of going through this of, all right, with the new CBA, it's really hard to have multiple guys that you're paying at that level. So Jokic, Murray, and then their biggest problem is that they're paying Porter, and he's not healthy or he's not good.
Mm-hmm.
Or not justifying the money. But now you've got all this money basically wrapped up into three guys, and so it makes it very difficult to go and acquire other veterans around them and pay and keep them. Because of the financial structure. So what everyone winds up doing, or what these two teams have wound up doing, which is we have these three guys, we have to get them, we have to maximize them, but financially we're strained to the point where it's like our options are we have to draft well and we have to hope these young guys work out. And I just think like the biggest problem with the Grizzlies is even after Zach Kleiman two off seasons ago, or now I guess it's three off seasons ago, said, well, doubling down, tripling down on youth, that was a mistake. The Grizzlies have gotten younger every single year after that. And it's like, yes, I understand everyone's thinking the coach is what matters. But like, I don't really care that much about who they pick to coach the team. I just want them to get like another, get me a 31-year-old dog. Just, they, you know, a true professional. Like, you pick your guy. But it's like they need that one guy. And I feel like they're like that. It, to me, like that addition would make me feel better about next year more so than whoever they pick to coach the team.
What position would it be? Because I think they tried that with Smart.
It's the three.
And it didn't work.
So,
and then maybe D Rose a little bit.
Who got traded right before Marcus? Because originally what happened is.
Was it Laravia?
No. I'm sorry. The big NBA trade.
Oh.
Was it Middleton? So the Grizzlies, whoever, if you go back like to that offseason, a trade happens and that opens up Marcus Smart.
And Holiday.
Holiday. The Grizzlies tried to get in on Holiday. Didn't get Holiday. And then that opens up and they're like, well, we didn't get Holiday. Let's do the Marcus Smart thing.
Because Holiday probably would have been a better option.
Definitely better fit like
than Smart. And at this age, than even Derrick Rose.
Correct.
Or whatever. So, yeah, that definitely would. Yeah, I'm just thinking of a, like Jimmy Butler would have been good, but he kind of publicly said he didn't want to take that girl to the prom a couple of times.
So, the problem, though, with Butler is everyone kept latching on to the anywhere but Memphis. Number one, he said other places, too. But the reason why he said anywhere but Memphis is the Grizzlies were not going to have the ability to offer him the extension.
That next year, like Golden State.
Like, so he got $100 million guaranteed.
Mm-hmm.
So that was all about a contract. And the Grizzlies would have been fine paying him this year and having him as a rental, but it was the, well, we're not going to extend him. That's why he didn't want to go there. He wanted to get the one more big deal.
Gotcha. And then ain't Durant saying no a couple times?
Durant has said no, but Durant keeps saying no because, I mean, he has the contract, but I don't know. I mean, I think this is interesting. I would like to know if the older guys, if, like, I think for a while we thought playing with Ja would be attractive. I don't think Ja's got the best reputation amongst that generation. Maybe they're wrong, but it seems to me that they don't hold Ja in the same league that they do with other young guys. Like, I think they have Ant way ahead of him. Like, obviously they have SGA, but like SGA is going to be the MVP this year. So, like, sure. But I'm saying I would be curious. I would be curious how to know, like, how those guys feel about, like, Ja versus De'Aaron Fox.
I think because of age, though, Ja might be a little bit better. But I think De Fox, like you said, they might.
I think he's only a year older, though, right?
Maybe because Ja went to college.
Yeah, Ja was there for 2 years. De'Aaron, I think, was one.
Okay, so they're in the same age group. I thought De'Aaron was a little closer to 30 by now, but I might be wrong. So I remember De'Aaron
is 27 and Ja's 26, right?
Okay, so that's probably the college. Okay, that's what's throwing me off, the college thing. But I know at one point Brad.
Ja will be, so they're a year and a half apart. Ja will be 26 in August.
Okay, be 26. Yeah, because last year we did that, the NBA did that 25 and under.
Yeah.
It was weird because they didn't put him on there, but people was like, some people saying because they saying he older, but
yeah.
It was like, no, he's only 25. You could have put him on
right.
The list. So that was a debate. I know at one point the kid I coach, OG Anunoby, was picked to come here.
Yeah.
I know at one point.
Maybe that's what it was. They struck out on Anunoby.
Yeah.
Or they didn't strike out.
When OG went to the Knicks?
Yeah, they couldn't make the, that's what it was. They couldn't get Anunoby. And when they couldn't get Anunoby, they pivoted to Marcus.
Now, a year or two ago, they was in good from what I'm hearing before the Suns and everybody did. they would them and Miami both was in good with Bradley Beal. This is back when Bradley Beal was still thought of as one of those guys. But the Grizzlies, from the people I mean, the one
that I think is actually fascinating, because I've never been the biggest Beal guy. I love Beal as like an aspirational figure, but I've never been convinced that he's a winning basketball player. But what would have been, it would have been sucked for me on a personal level. But if they would have actually pulled off the Draymond thing.
He was really considering it.
I mean, he basically said he told the Warriors he was taking it.
Then they upped Andy.
Correct.
But the crazy thing about the Beal thing is, we didn't know until he got to Phoenix that he was truly not a winner. At that point, because you looked at Washington as they was cramping everybody's style. They was, you know, I don't know if the good word to say garbage anyway. Might be too harsh.
He couldn't do it with John Wall.
Huh?
He couldn't even do it with John Wall there. Come on.
But people were saying the Wizards wasn't them programs.
It was the equivalent of where Mike Trout never takes any flack for the Angels sucking.
Yeah. So it was like, okay, you get to Miami, we're going to see this system you hear here. But from talking to the Grizzlies at the time, or people around it, they honestly, when we was hot a few years ago, super hot, and I thought it was naive, they didn't want to do it. They were saying, personally, people around that, we have to give up too much. They liked that they young core so much at that point. Because, you know, the average fan, we was like, and I love Desmond Baines. I was him and my kid, Jalen Fisher. I knew Desmond Baines. I used to go up to TCU. Desmond Baines came to TCU as a unsigned senior going to prep school. So he wasn't even in the mix. My kid was top there. So I say to say I love Desmond Baines. But at the time, I'm like, I definitely would put him in a Bradley Beal trade. At the time, Bradley Beal was like still a 4 or 5-time All-Star, if I'm not mistaken, or whatever, or close to it. But no, they was more on their young talent at the time.
So we'll get into more of that. We got to take a break, because when we come back, we got to talk Tigers. We'll do that with Munns. Let's do it next right here at Jeffrey Wright & Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. I'm worried about the Tigers' NIL situation. I don't think the war chest is – I don't think the war chest – like, it's – if we're talking about in the league, it's still clearly good for the league. I'm very worried about on the national scale.
All right, so you're not necessarily, when you say you're worried about Memphis's NIL situation, it's not necessarily that you're worried that Memphis doesn't have anything. It's that you're worried that others have upped their game.
Precisely.
Some considerably.
Yes.
Whereas it's unclear, and it's at the very least apparent that Memphis hasn't, either hasn't upped theirs at all or hasn't upped it as much as others.
Yes, and I think I would add one other scenario. I also think the price of players went up insanely this time.
There's no doubt about that.
I'm hearing like legitimate reports of like completely average players getting $1 million.
Well, that may be, but I will say that I spoke to someone over the weekend who is an active assistant coach in a power conference, a current assistant coach with a power conference team, a team that made the NCAA tournament. And we talked about a lot of things, but one of the things that was said to me was that if Tyrese Hunter was in the portal right now, he would command considerably north of $1 million, and he did not make $1 million
right
last season at Memphis, or he didn't fetch that amount from anybody last season. As a matter of fact, he wasn't the highest paid player at Memphis last year. He wasn't even the second highest paid player
right
at Memphis last year. And so that kind of should tell a lot of people, you know, where things are compared to where they were just last year at this time.
Yeah, I mean, Herd, you can step in here. I've heard basically the numbers doubled.
That's true. The only thing, and you two, that I have to wrap my mind around is, I think it has went up, but how much of this is, you know, agents are also doing what they're doing and inflate numbers. Now, I do have a couple sought-out kids right now in the portal, And I have got some texts. I'm going to show you one of some crazy money already just to sit down. So I think the price half went up, but also I don't know where one getting all this money from either.
Yeah, I think Munz, you tell me if my understanding is a lot of people right now are promising money thinking the revenue sharing is going to start. They're promising it now because even if the House settlement doesn't even get approved this week, they think it's going to be approved by the time rosters are set, and so they're promising that money.
Yes. But no, Herd makes a great point. Like, that should be taken into account. And I think it's – I mean, I think it's a some of one and some of the other. I think it's some – you know, this is coming from – you know, some of these numbers are coming from people who are, you know, like have no reason to embellish the number, to fudge the numbers. And then there are, but I do think there is a ton of that out there where the agents, representatives, whatever you want to call them, are, you know, it only helps them. It doesn't help them to give the exact number.
Right.
And so I genuinely believe that a lot of the information out there is driven by that subset of the,
no,
of the population.
I definitely agree with you on that. So I get less hung up when I see the infographic about certain player getting X dollars. You know what I mean? Like, I'm happy, good for him, but I also know how the business works. Most of the time when you get those exact numbers, it's coming from the agent. And the agent wants the biggest possible number out there. That's how their business works. And I don't view this as like some evil thing. I just, you know what I mean? Like, I know when to like go, okay, I don't, that's not really that pertinent to me. So what I have paid attention to is I pay attention to when coaches either stay and get the extension, like AKA Chris Beard.
Right.
I pay attention to how much money did they amp or up the ante for NIL, because I think that's always going to be a significant part of it. And then I really pay attention to, and maybe you can tell me that I'm wrong, but I'm reading the story this weekend. Was it the player, Bucky had a player from somewhere in Alabama. He didn't coach him at Samford, but now he's at A&M, and it was Memphis or A&M. He picks A&M. The young man that you talked to last week that had a good visit with Memphis and
Georgia Tech,
and everything felt positive, and then all of a sudden he's at Georgetown the next day. Like, that's kind of what I'm paying attention to, is that when they're swimming in these waters, they're striking out. I don't think they're striking out because Penny's a bad recruiter. Penny can't get the job done. I think they're striking out, and I'm also paying attention to when Penny goes on podcasts and he's telling everyone, like, it's a business now, and he's, you just hear basically, like, I interpret it as someone who's like, it's all about the money, and I don't have as much money as a lot of these guys I'm going up against.
I think anybody who, you mentioned recruiting, I think anybody who is treating this game now the way it used to be treated, as far as,
like, the drama, you know, if you will.
Well, just the recruiting part of
it.
Like, no, this is not recruiting anymore. This is strictly business. Like,
no, I mean, it's true free agency.
Yeah, like, it's not across the board. Don't get me wrong. There are schools out there who are still recruiting the way it used to be, the way you used to, and are having great success. I point to a team like a program like Houston.
Sure.
For example. But they're the outlier. The rest of the country is having to learn and adjust. They're having to learn how to do this, how to remove the recruiting part of it almost exclusively, completely, and treat it for what it is. It is strictly business. Like, Penny is not lying when he is talking about, when he says that money is what matters. Like, I don't know that it matters. Again, I don't think it's literally all that matters, but it is so, it matters so much more now than it ever has before, because the players hold all the power. They hold every bit of the power. Now, it's a whole different discussion. Like, how long is this going to last?
Sure.
I don't think it's going to be this way forever. I think we are going to, I think the wheels are probably already in motion to, you know, start to regulate it and, you know, maybe collective bargaining becomes a thing eventually, where you can start, like, you know, signing players to multi-year deals, and you can start putting stuff in contracts like buyout terms and things like that. But I mean, that's the thing that gets me about all of this is, like, that was the one thing everybody always said was, it's fair for coaches to do it. Why can't players do it? Well, coaches also have buyouts in their contracts. So, like, if you really want to go there, well, we'll go there. We'll start, you know, making it.
There's compensation.
Yeah. So, anyway, I do think that though that Memphis is just in a tricky spot right now, and it doesn't help that this house settlement case is dragging out the way that it is. But no, I don't remember if I said this on your show last week or not, but I know I said it somewhere. But the gap between, like, Memphis was, like, in a really good place in terms of, like, the landscape, the NIL war chest landscape last season and every season up until last season. But I think that the gap between those that were ahead of Memphis and are ahead of Memphis is widening, and the gap between Memphis and the teams that were behind them is narrowing.
Yeah, I think to your point about the, you know, money isn't everything. It's like, okay, I don't necessarily know if every single kid out there is going to literally, whoever just offers the most money, that's where I'm going. I think there are some. Right. I think it's like everything. There are some people that would, Zach Greinke once upon a time said, if they'll pay me $250 million to pitch on the moon, I'll go pitch on the moon. There are plenty of people that are just, this is a business, this is a job, like that's how I'm treating it. That's fine. The problem that I see is it seems like you have to at least be able to get in the same ballpark.
Right.
And it feels like more than ever, Memphis is struggling to get in the same ballpark, but I also, in the back of my mind, have been wondering, well, is this also because, man, they're going to try to make the most competitive offer to keep PJ Haggerty?
I think that's a big part of it, too. I think that situation being unresolved, being seemingly, at least outwardly, unresolved, is affecting what we're seeing. I think it's having an effect on what we're seeing with Memphis only having two commitments, and at least commitments that we know of, and like, apparently, because that's the other thing, you know, we're talking about the information that agents are spreading. Like, it's also largely these reports that you see, feels like every day, of this player has been contacted or is receiving interest from this school, that school, this school, that school. Like, that's also largely driven by the agents.
Yes.
It's not always true. Like, there's a world where Memphis, like, sure, if Memphis gets a guy on campus, gets a player on campus, well, obviously Memphis is connected to that player. They are trying to get that player. But if they're just working on a visit or planning to schedule a visit with somebody, that doesn't necessarily, like, that may just mean that Memphis has extended an offer to that player. It doesn't necessarily mean that it's gotten to the point where Memphis, it's either Memphis or somebody else. So anyway, I got myself sidetracked there, but I think that's an important distinction, that just because it seems like Memphis is involved with five dozen guys this off season, I don't think that's accurate. But you know, the other thing that I think is interesting is if NIL, if there is sort of, if money is the issue for Memphis, like with what's going on right now with Quante Berry and Ashton Hardaway and maybe PJ Haggerty and maybe Dante Harris, is Memphis having a tough time accepting that?
Yeah.
Accepting their place in the pecking order? Like, is Memphis shooting too high? Are they aiming too high, and that's the issue, or what? Like, is there a reality where it's really not like Memphis is actually in a much better spot than we all feel like they are? I mean, I can't say for sure that they're not. P.J. Haggerty's not in the transfer portal. It's almost what day is it? April 14th. We'll see how that shakes out. But there's only going to be three teams in the country with a player on their roster that was an APL American this year, and there's still a chance that Memphis is one of them. So, like, it's not all bad.
No, I mean, I'm with you, because I think part of the problem is also, it's like, okay, I know Michigan did pretty well, but it's like, you know, there are what? I feel like there's like 2,100 kids or something like that in the portal.
Right.
And so, you know, I'm not keeping up with every single team that and how they're filling out their roster. I'm more paying attention to, all right, who are the guys that they've actually targeted? Because like you said, I'm not focused on every single player that has Memphis in a team's considering, but I am paying attention to when they bring guys on campus, or, you know, the ones that you can tell, like, okay, this is a serious effort by Memphis to go after them. And it feels